We don't know that much about politics. I'm not interested in those things unless it relates to my company or work.
If anybody does care, strict security measures have been put in place as China's Communist Party is set to host a high-level meeting in Beijing. This is Wednesday, October 18th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, another surge of refugees are making the trek from Myanmar to Bangladesh. Two Chinese nationals are among those indicted on charges they manufactured tons of powerful drugs that were then peddled in the U.S. And U.S. and Japanese diplomats agree on the need to be prepared for the worst if diplomacy in North Korea fails. All on today's VOA Asia. China's Communist Party is hosting a high-level political meeting this week, which will reshuffle the ruling party's top leadership. Strict security measures have been put in place across the country, along with sweeping censorship controls online to ensure its success. VOA's Bill Ide has more from Beijing.
For China's communist leaders, the 19th Party Congress will be an exercise in rallying around the country's leader, President Xi Jinping. For the public, the meetings mean pervasive security on the streets and long lines at metro stations in the capital, and heightened controls on expression. Videos and even simple warnings posted on social media about the long waits have been quickly taken down. In Xi's China, even the smallest things are sensitive. At the last Congress in 2012, Xi sat quietly to the side of his predecessor Hu Jintao and party elder Jiang Zemin. Now, following a vast anti-corruption drive that has sidelined his political rivals, he is regarded as the core of the party. At the end of the Congress, a new Politburo Standing Committee will be unveiled as it was when Xi rose to power 5 years ago. And governments across the globe are watching to see who stays and who goes, and how that may bolster the authority of Xi, a ruler already seen as China's most powerful in decades. Despite banners across the city welcoming the Congress and a massive state media blitz over the past few weeks, on the streets few seemed interested in the political jockeying, Xi's growing authority, or even the meetings.
We don't know that much about politics. I'm not interested in those things unless it relates to my company or work. The only thing that bothers me now is that express delivery services have been suspended, so I have to go shopping myself.
I certainly hope that our country is getting stronger, my own personal incomes grow, and our lives get better.
People care less about whether he has consolidated his own power, but more about whether he has strived to improve people's livelihood, which is the top priority. I won't say much about him as long as China is on the right track.
Some say it is on track, noting improvements in infrastructure and the impact the anti-corruption drive has had on the bureaucracy. But closing the gap between the party and the public remains a daunting challenge that goes beyond flags, floral displays, and banners. Xi still has a long way to go to win the hearts and minds of the public, analysts say, and how he uses his increased authority in the wake of the meetings will be key to determining whether he can do just that. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
These are among the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. A federal judge in Hawaii blocks President Donald Trump's latest order restricting travel. More than 10,000 additional Rohingya flee to Bangladesh. U.S. prosecutors have announced their first ever indictments against Chinese opioid manufacturers. Another deadly terrorist attack in southern Afghanistan, and the Philippine president declares a southern city liberated from terrorist influence. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues now. UN agencies say the number of Rohingya refugees arriving in Bangladesh from Myanmar has jumped to 582,000. Nearly 60% of them are children. The UN Children's Fund, UNICEF, warns that children are living in life-threatening conditions and are susceptible to killer diseases. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Children's Fund spokeswoman Marixi Mercado has just returned from Bangladesh near the border with Myanmar, where she saw children living in shelters perched precariously on hillsides. She says the makeshift shelters are so flimsy, they are likely to collapse during a strong wind or rainfall. She says she saw children in Cox's Bazar drinking dirty water from muddy ponds, causing outbreaks of acute diarrhea. In just 1 week this month, she says, there were 10,000 cases of the illness. She says children are suffering from skin diseases because of the unsanitary conditions. Mercado tells VOA she spoke with a group of women who recounted horrific tales of what they had experienced in Myanmar. Among them were two teenage sisters.
And they were terrified because they had lost family members, so they were alone. They were terrified about their future. They were terrified about having a safe place to sleep, of being protected, of having enough to eat. They're terrified of being alone. They were just terrified of their future.
Unfortunately, Mercado says their fears are justified. She says UNICEF has received just 7% of the $76 million it needs to provide emergency support to children over the next 6 months. Without the money, she warns the Rohingya children will lose out on every level. She says her agency will have to stop trucking safe water to 40,000 people. It will not be able to build enough latrines or provide therapeutic food to 15,000 children suffering from life-threatening severe acute malnutrition. She warns that tens of thousands of children will not have access to health care, and about 100,000 newly arrived refugee children will not be immunized against killer diseases, including measles, rubella, and polio. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Now, some of the reasons behind all of this, the Myanmar military has been accused of the widespread burning of Rohingya villages, of rape, killings, looting, and the laying of landmines to prevent people returning to their homes. This violence follows deadly attacks carried out by Rohingya militants on August 25th against state security forces. UNHCR, another UN, the UN Refugee Agency, estimates that between 10,000 and 15,000 more people are waiting to cross near the border in Bangladesh. The agency spokesman is Andre Maichich.
UNHCR and our partners, the Bangladesh Red Crescent and Action Against Hunger, are delivering food and water to the stranded refugees, among them children, women, and the elderly, who are dehydrated and hungry from the long journey. Our staff are working with Médecins Sans Frontières to identify the sick for treatment. We are advocating with the Bangladesh authorities to urgently admit these refugees fleeing violence and increasingly difficult conditions back home. Every minute counts, given the fragile condition they are in.
Drone footage from the agency shows thousands of Rohingya lined up for kilometers in what appears to be a rain-swollen creek in southern Bangladesh. Separately, the United Nations political chief Jeffrey Feltman wrapped up a five-day visit to Myanmar, where he met with de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi and the army chief general Min Aung Hlaing, among others. He reiterated the secretary general's call that aid workers be given full and unimpeded access to northern Rakhine State and that refugees be permitted voluntary, safe, and dignified return to their place of origin. A UN spokesperson said Feltman also visited northern Rakhine, where he saw dozens of burned and destroyed villages by air, and visited several communities affected by the recent violence. The spokesperson said that in his discussions with military leaders, Feltman stressed that successful counterterrorism efforts do not rely exclusively on security measures and underscored the importance of accountability and non-discriminatory rule of law to help build trust among the communities in Rakhine. The Rohingya are one of many ethnic minorities in the Buddhist majority nation. They're considered to be economic migrants from Bangladesh, and they've been denied citizenship, even though most can show that their families have been in Myanmar for generations. In neighboring Bangladesh, the head of the UN's migration agency, William Swing, visited camps and met with officials. The government, IOM, and other agencies are working to set up a new 3,000-acre camp to accommodate the rapidly arriving refugees. Next week, the United Nations will host a pledging conference in Geneva seeking $434 million to help more than a million Rohingya. Happening now in Asia, China's Communist Party is set to host a high-level meeting in Beijing, ushering in a much-anticipated reshuffle of the ruling party's top leadership. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are indeed happy you're with us here on VOA Asia. Two Chinese nationals have been indicted on charges that they manufactured tons of fentanyl and other powerful narcotics that were then peddled in the United States, killing at least four people and seriously injuring five others. The announcement was made in Washington by U.S. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein.
We believe that most, if not all, fentanyl that's distributed here in the U.S. and in Canada originates in China, either manufactured there or manufactured with precursor chemicals that come from China. And so we're seeking additional support from the Chinese government in cracking down on those labs and making sure that they take this issue as seriously as we do. I know if it were the other way around, if tens of thousands of Chinese nationals were dying as a result of poison shipped from the United States, we'd be very proactive, and so we're hoping to get the same kind of response from them. So with regard to these particular defendants, we have no extradition treaty with China, but we are optimistic and hopeful that the Chinese will take appropriate action to make sure that they're held accountable.
The men who are not in custody are accused of separately running chemical labs in China that produce the drug and other illegal opioids for sale online to Americans who are often unaware of its potency and susceptible to overdose. At least 21 other people were also indicted on charges that they trafficked the drugs across the U.S. and Canada.
The agents and prosecutors traced the source of those illegal drugs back to China. They found that they had gone through Oregon and Canada and had originated with a man named John Jiang in China. They learned that Jiang ran the organization that manufactured fentanyl in at least four different labs in China, and that he advertised and sold the fentanyl to U.S. customers over the Internet.
However, Rosenstein said while the men controlled one of the most prolific international drug trafficking organizations, the United States has no extradition treaty with China. He asked for assistance. But Rosenstein admitted that the chances are slim the men will ever be brought to the U.S. to face the charges. Rosenstein discussed the problem with Chinese officials just last week during a high-level dialogue on law enforcement and cybersecurity. He wouldn't say whether the labs have been shut down. He said he was hopeful Chinese authorities would hold the men accountable. Federal authorities are increasingly warning of the dangers of fentanyl, which can be lethal even in small amounts and is often laced with other dangerous drugs. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimated that more than 20,000 Americans were killed by the drug and its analogs in 2016. That number is rising. The opioid and designer drug problem worldwide continues to expand. I spoke with Rusty Payne, the spokesman for the U.S. DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration.
We've got the death numbers and the funeral numbers to back it up, unfortunately. I mean, we're talking about over 52,000 people died in this country of a drug-related overdose in 2015. And the 2016 numbers are getting ready to come out soon, and all indications are that that number is going to be over 60,000. And there's a lot of it we can attribute to drugs that come from overseas, specifically from these rogue underground labs in China.
How do you stop it? Is there any cooperation from the Chinese government?
Absolutely. It's as good as it's ever been, to be honest. We've got an office in Beijing. We sent the head of the DEA at the time, Mr. Rosenberg, back in January, flew to China and met with Ministry of Public Security officials, MPS. And over the last couple of years, China has actually changed their laws to schedule and control dozens of designer drugs and chemicals that have been making their way out of China and in, across the world that people have been abusing.
With any success?
And, sure, absolutely. You'd have to ask them a lot more of the specifics, but we've seen more cooperation and collaboration with the Chinese than we probably ever have on these issues.
Rusty Payne is a spokesman for the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. You're listening to VOA Asia.
From Pink to Pitbull, Beyonce to Bruno Mars, the hits live here on the Top 20 Countdown. Hi, I'm Ray McDonald, and for the past 30 years, I've been counting down the very best of the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart. The hit list never sleeps, so don't you miss a moment of the action. Join me every Thursday for the Top 20 Countdown, right here and worldwide on the Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. China's Communist Party opens a twice-a-decade Congress Wednesday for a leadership reshuffle expected to enhance President Xi Jinping's already formidable powers. The top U.S. commander of the Pacific warns that he must imagine the unimaginable in responding to the threat posted by the North Korean nuclear weapons program. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features. VOA Asia continues now. U.S. and Japanese diplomats agreed Tuesday to maximize pressure on North Korea to resolve tensions over its nuclear program while citing the need to be prepared for the worst if diplomacy fails. The U.S. Deputy Secretary of State John Sullivan, after meeting his Japanese counterpart Shinsuke Sugiyama, told reporters that the focus at the State Department is still on diplomacy to solve the problem and eventually denuclearize the Korean Peninsula.
Our focus at the State Department on behalf of President Trump is on diplomacy to solve this problem that's presented by the DPRK and its nuclear weapons program and its ballistic missile program. We must, however, with our allies in Japan and South Korea and elsewhere, to be prepared for the worst should diplomacy fail.
Sullivan added the U.S. must be prepared to defend itself and its allies. Sugiyama, meanwhile, briefing reporters separately, reiterated Japan's support for President Trump's policy of keeping all options open, but did stress the need for a diplomatic solution by bolstering cooperation among Japan, the United States, and South Korea, as well as via cooperation with China and Russia. The two diplomats will join their South Korean counterpart in Seoul for further talks Wednesday on North Korea. The talks come as the U.S. and South Korea hold joint naval drills this week. They regularly conduct such joint exercises, though North Korea condemns them as an invasion rehearsal. North Korea's deputy U.N. ambassador warned Monday that the situation on the peninsula has reached the touch-and-go point, and a nuclear war may break out at any moment. Kim In-ryong told the U.N. General Assembly's Disarmament Committee that North Korea has been subjected to a direct nuclear threat from the United States and has the right to possess nuclear weapons and self-defense. He pointed to military exercises and what he called a U.S. plan to stage a secret operation aimed at the removal of our supreme leadership. Kim's speech follows increasingly tough U.N. sanctions. Russian President Vladimir Putin said his country is curtailing economic, scientific, and other ties with North Korea in line with U.N. sanctions, and the European Union announced new sanctions as well. Here's a news alert from VOA Asia. Taliban militants struck government targets in many provinces of Afghanistan on Tuesday, killing at least 69 people. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Coming up now on VOA Asia, early in life, children get the message that boys are strong and capable and that girls are vulnerable and limited in what they can do. VOA's Carol Pearson found out that is the result of a new study, the first ever, that looks at adolescents and the messages they get from society and their parents.
No matter where they live, children get a strong message about what's expected of them as they grow up. And in most countries around the world, these expectations are rigidly tied to gender roles. Boys learn they have to be strong. They're encouraged to explore the outside world, but researchers say these gender expectations leave them with an increased risk of HIV, homicide, suicide, and alcoholism. Girls get the message that their bodies are both an asset and a liability. They need to look good, but not too good. They need to stay away from boys so they don't bring shame on their families. Dr. Bob Blum at the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health headed the study.
There was no research at all, no understanding at all of young adolescents. There was an assumption that these are young children still, and they aren't cued in to gender-based violence, gendered messages, rape, and things of that nature. What we see is that around the world, young people have keen awareness, and they're very cued in to what's going on.
Researchers interviewed 450 adolescents under the age of 15, along with their parents. The interviews were held in 15 high, low, and middle-income countries, but they focused on poor children. Chandra Mouli, who is with the World Health Organization, says poverty has a powerful effect on perpetuating these damaging norms. It means that boys will be pulled out of school and sent to work. It means that girls won't be educated and will be married off early.
If I see the daughter in my house as a burden, and a burden that I need to watch over very carefully because I don't want her to have sex before marriage, because if she does, she's not marriageable, then what do? I withdraw her from school as soon as she starts her periods. I keep her under very tight control and I get her married off as quickly as I can.
But there is a push for change. In Nigeria, study researcher Bamideli Bello found that girls do not want to be limited by being female.
They want to become doctors, professors, irrespective of their gender. They have high aspirations and they want to achieve it.
In China, most women hold jobs. But cultural norms can limit their careers. In addition to earning a living, women are also expected to take care of the home and elderly parents, a burden that does not affect men, according to researcher Jiayan Zhua.
Our traditional culture calls for us that women should be subordinated to their men.
The World Health Organization and Johns Hopkins Medicine collaborated on the study. The WHO wants to use the findings to shape programs to change misunderstandings about gender norms for children the world over before they reach middle adolescence at the age of 15. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
In the Australian bushland, citizen scientists are helping conservation officials track invasive and endangered species. VOA's Kevin Enix reports by using a special app, nature lovers can mark the vulnerable or even invasive wildlife as they wander the countryside.
Canberra Nature Park totals about 6,800 hectares of protected land inside the small Australian Capital Territory. In addition to the park's dedicated rangers, hikers and nature enthusiasts are monitoring the health of some rare species, like this orchid. They call themselves nature mappers.
A big walk that people could, you know, do in a couple of hours would take me, you know, 4 or 5 hours to complete. And I'm always just looking at the side of the path intently to see if I can see anything jump out at me.
That is the goal, to simply keep an eye out for all kinds of wildlife they see in the park.
We get up to 700 different sightings a week.
When they find something unusual, they mark the name and location using a smartphone app.
Canberra people really know their bush well. And they go for a walk and they know, oh, I haven't seen that plant before. And they take a photo. As well as sending in some really amazing rare plants, they also send in photos of weeds. And we've had photos of weeds we didn't know were here, and we've gone out and controlled them that afternoon.
It is not just plants, but all kinds of wildlife. Nature mappers say it is all about keeping your eyes open.
You just get used to spotting things for different animals. Sometimes there's different little tips for raptors or birds of prey.
The conservation managers in the park say they are thankful for the help and that nature mappers are teaching them things about the national park every day. Yep. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes, SoundCloud, and all of our digital platforms. Our thanks to Director Tracy Carter, our engineer Thomas Blondet, Managing Editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Jim Stevenson, David Bird, and Skylar Ogden. I'm Ira Melvin in Washington. Enjoy your day.